And welcome to the Deuce Podcast. I'm Brad.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we are doing episode 62, a very special episode. We went to go see The Incredibles 2 in the movie theater, and we are going to do a show about it. So this is going to be a very... we're trying not to spoil the movie too much, but there are going to be spoilers that happen during this episode. So we just wanted to put that heads up, just like there was heads up at the movie itself. Saying, yes. Hey, there might be flashes of quick flashes, right?
I can definitely understand why they had to put that warning out. Mm-hmm. It was kind of they didn't have a whole lot of foresight when it came to putting that in.
Yeah, did they not have that to begin with? I haven't heard anything about that until we went to the theater. Like, I didn't read anything about it.
Yeah,
I tried to avoid spoilers, though. But.
Somebody had gone to the theater, and I don't think they had epilepsy. But they were like, this could definitely trigger this if people didn't know about it. So it's a health thing. Right. And so this lady, she put it on Twitter. And people, which I get, like, it's how many times do we see this now? But she put it out and she said, hey, this is a serious health risk. This could be whatever. And everybody's like, boo, you know, thinking she's just... did you check if everybody in the world is allergic to peanuts or not? You know, like just being overly cautious or complaining about every little thing. She's like, no, seriously, if somebody's in there when this happens, you know, if they don't know about it, there's no warning whatsoever, and this could seriously cause problems. And it was too late for Disney to necessarily go back and, like, put that in everywhere. So a lot of places were just putting it in themselves or putting something up about it first. So, like, theaters started posting
it. First thing I heard. Like, this is the first time when we got the tickets that there was a sign that said that.
Yeah.
I was wow.
Theaters have been posting it, and then when we actually saw the movie, and I don't know if they just got a new reel or, like, an insert or something, but it actually said, warning. Could cause.
Just to let you know, warning.
Yeah.
So, this will have some spoilers to this episode. But before we talk about those spoilers, before we talk about anything, Jeremy.
Yes.
Why don't we pause for some station identification?
Perfect.
You know?
But before we get too far into that, too, mm-hmm. I just want to say, as you are aware, we are part of the No Phony Podcast Network. And so, this month's featured podcast is Politics with Dummies. So, with J-Ray and Loop Dog.
There you go. Yes.
So make sure you go out and listen to that. They have some great insights. The way they discuss and the way they talk about it, it's very refreshing from, you know, kind of this, like, rhetoric on either side where nobody's listening to anything. They're talking through things. You get kind of these viewpoints that you're like, huh, I guess I didn't think about it that way. Plus, Loop Dog's got that fantastic laugh.
He does. So, after these messages, we'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hello, my name is David Campice.
And I'm Brandon Barber.
And we are part of the podcast Hypothetically Great. It's a comedy podcast where we ask each other hypothetical questions, like, would you rather eat roadkill? Or would you rather hear everyone's voice as Gilbert Gottfried?
I remember that one. That was great. On top of having our own questions prepared, we also encourage our listeners to participate and send in their own questions.
So if you'd like to find out what we would do if a 6-foot-tall man made a chocolate walked in the room, take a listen to our show. We're a part of the No Phony Podcast Network with a lot of great shows like the Miles and Crawford Variety Hour and Politics with Dummies.
And we're back.
We are back.
We are back. Now, in order to watch this movie, I'm going to tell our listeners that, because a lot of times you have to order tickets online. When you order your tickets online and you go to the movie theater, make sure that you go to the movie theater at the right day and time, Jeremy. What happened to us?
So, and this has happened to a friend of ours before, and this is karma.
Yeah.
Because Court of Cinema PsyOps did this for Mad Max. He bought tickets for the next day.
Why don't you tell people what you did?
So, we go to our movie theater. I ordered tickets this morning because I was like, ooh, I want to make sure we have them. And I get onto the website for this local theater that we have because we like to you know,
support local.
Yeah, go support the local stuff. Yeah. And so we're like, yeah, let's do it. And so I order them and I go, wow, it's really weird that like 11 o'clock on a Sunday, the whole theater is open. I got my pick of it all. And so I picked my seats. You know, we're like, this is going to be fine. We got ready. We headed out. And we walk up. We get our tickets. Guy looks at them, tells us where to go, get our concessions, the whole deal, the whole movie experience. We are sitting in our seats.
Some kid comes up to us about 5 minutes after.
Nice young man.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Very polite.
Excuse me. You're in our seats.
He goes, I believe you're in our seats.
And I go,
like,
no.
And I was just like, because I'm just like, man, you better check again because I have tickets that said this. I'm very like, I'm very particular about making sure that we are.
Yeah. We were sitting in row 5-9 or F9.
Row F seats, F9. 9 and 10.
9 and 10.
And I go, no, these are our seats.
So the kid goes away. He brings his dad in and like his big family.
Yeah. They have like 6 people in their family.
It's like the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
He's like, excuse me, you're in our seats. And we're like, no, we're not. We're F9. And he's like, no, we're F9.
And he shows me the ticket.
Yeah.
And I go, how is that even possible?
How is that possible?
For like the same time. And I go, well, maybe it's a computer thing.
He goes out to talk to the manager.
I was being obstinate about it. So yeah. I you know, hunkered down in our seats because I was going to win. You know, damn it, I was going to win.
So I was checking the ticket and I was like, well, everything adds up. We're an F9.
Yeah.
This is 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And you're like, what day does it say?
I looked at it.
Wednesday.
I looked at it and I saw the date and I saw that it said WED in front of it. And I went, what date does your ticket say? He's like,
Wednesday. No wonder no one was in the theater. Yeah. It's, you know, movie experience was supposed to be.
I got up
4 days after this.
So I got up and I told the family, I'm like, I'm so sorry. This is my fault.
We find the father in in the lobby.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, thank you. And we tell him we made a mistake.
Yeah.
We go get other tickets and then you run and go buy.
I think like the manager was like, there was a lady who was going with him who I think was like the assistant manager.
Cause I think they're going to go in.
Yeah. I think the manager was being a wuss cause he was staying like way off on the other side.
Yes. There was a guy that swore that was the manager.
Yeah.
And he was just being a wuss,
but it was
an honest mistake.
Yeah. I apologize.
We fixed it.
We told him, oh my gosh, this is going on. And the gal was like, the assistant manager's like, well, let's get you some new tickets. Let's see if we can get you some new tickets for today. And so we headed back over to take care of that. And the manager guy who came out from cowering behind the podium was like, thanks for being civil about that, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So he goes, thanks for being civil.
Whatever.
I go, well, it was my mistake.
I
go, well, it was my mistake.
So because you got such a kind heart, you went to the concession stand, bought some candy, and then you gave candy to strangers.
Yes.
You went up to the family and gave them some boxes of goobers and some boxes of gummy bears.
I gave them dots.
Okay, good.
I gave them a giant Kit Kat bar.
Okay.
And I almost gave them M&Ms, but I gave them Milk Duds instead.
Ooh, you gave them not good candy. But
I did.
Whatever.
Milk Duds are fantastic.
Milk Duds are terrible.
Oh,
they
stick
to your
duds.
Mouth. Whatever. Anyway.
But yeah, they were like, oh, you didn't have to do that. I was like, please. Like, I felt like a heel because I was just like, get out of here, kid. When he came up.
So I thought we'd drop the deuce a little bit different in this movie and just kind of shoot the crap about this movie. Spoilers are in effect starting now. But before we talk about the movie itself, we need to talk about the short that happened because there's about, what, a 5-minute short?
Yeah, just like with every Pixar movie.
With every Pixar movie that happened beforehand. Now, I don't know if this happens in all the movie theaters, but in our movie theater, they had like this montage with Craig T. Nelson and what's her face?
Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter's grandma.
And Holly Hunter's grandma. and Samuel Jackson, where they're like, hey, it's been 14 years, right? Yeah. And then, like, Samuel Jackson says, it's been 14 years, but it's well worth the wait. Now, without further interruption, here's Incredibles. And then it goes to the five-minute short. Right?
Yes.
And I'm like, that's the worst place to have that. Don't put that there. Put that after the short.
Right? Well, you don't want that.
Without further ado,
either.
Incredibles 2. But hold on. Here's a five-minute short about like a bow that comes to life.
Yeah.
So
but that's the short. It's called Bow.
Yeah.
And so just to kind of give you the premise of it. So a Chinese-Canadian woman suffering from...
I got that she was Chinese-Canadian. Did you get that she was Chinese-Canadian?
Well, the setting was in Canada.
Oh, yeah, it was in Canada.
Was showed a Canadian thing.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. She's Chinese-Canadian, suffering from empty nest, the kind of empty nest syndrome, gets a second shot at motherhood when one of her handmade dumplings comes to life.
Yeah.
And this, I think they showed some of this, like, a while back before they even started releasing stuff about Incredibles 2, like the trailer.
This wasn't initially supposed to be out. It was Toy Story 4 was supposed to be out before. And so the short that's at the beginning of Toy Story 4 mm-hmm. was actually supposed to be the short that was supposed to be before.
Really?
Yeah, so they switched those two.
What is the short on
I don't know. Can't remember.
Interesting. Yeah. Now I'm intrigued. The cool thing about this is, it's directed by Domi Shi, who is the first woman to direct a Pixar short.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And I think that, like, it was kind of, if I remember right, they said there was, like, a little bit of autobiographical
probably
stuff with this. But it's
although
the first
it's a son that goes
yes
off, so yeah
well the person who kind of wrote right. it and yeah but Bao from what I understand so Bao Bao or Bao Bao is like a kind of a like pet name for a baby
not I didn't pet know name, that like I didn't
a,
know that
yeah
that
like
makes
a sweet
sense.
Name for a baby in culture so okay. it makes kind of makes sense Bao means like a package
right.
or filled package or something like
right.
that. So, but it's kind of a affectionate name. So, it's pretty cute. So, I mean, the animation just of it looks very good.
Yeah, it's nice. It's heartfelt. It has.
Yeah.
It's cute. It's whimsical. It's sad. It's funny.
Yeah.
It has all the things that you want in a Pixar thing. It just didn't pack in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's fine. I don't necessarily know. Like, I understand now that this probably would play better at the start of Toy Story 4.
It would.
That makes more sense to me. It doesn't really fit with Incredibles.
It doesn't. I would agree with that. It makes more sense to put it with Toy Story because...
So now that I read that, it makes kind of sense.
Yeah. And because it's you're playing on a similar emotion
yeah.
for Toy Story 4 and
yeah.
then this, it grows. It deals with growing up.
Yeah,
you know, losing that kind of like the changing relationship between parents and children.
That's not necessarily what the themes of Incredibles 2 is about.
No.
So which we will talk about here
yeah.
in a moment. But now, without further ado, let's really talk about Incredibles 2.
Let's do it.
Not like Samuel Jackson when he was just like, now without further ado,
yeah, right.
Incredibles 2, but first, a 5 minute.
Yeah.
Short.
So before we do that, we should talk about...
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding.
Give a little synopsis of what
yeah,
this movie's
I'm just
about.
Yeah, I'm going to give a quick synopsis. It won't be too spoilerific.
And then we'll talk about it. We'll talk about our favorite scenes. We'll talk about some themes that we thought came from this movie.
Yeah. In Incredibles 2, Helen, a.k.a. Elastigirl, who's voiced by Holly Hunter.
Holly Hunter is
called to lead this campaign to bring superheroes back on, like, a national level, while Bob Parr, a.k.a. Mr. Incredible.
Craig T. Nelson.
Yes. Navigates the day-to-day heroics of normal life, basically taking care of the kids at home, his teenage daughter Violet, kind of middle school-aged Dash, and the baby, Jack-Jack, who is starting to exhibit superpowers.
Of his own.
Yeah, and we saw some of those at the end of the first movie, but none of the family knew about it, so it's a new concept to them. Their mission is, Helen's mission is derailed when a new villain emerges with a brilliant and dangerous, with a brilliant and dangerous plot that threatens everything. Incredible family, though, doesn't shy away from the challenge, especially with their friend Frozone, voiced by Samuel L. Jackson. Who is by their side through this whole adventure.
Yeah, which he gets more screen time during this, doesn't he? The first time?
Yes, he does get more screen time.
Good.
But that's what makes the family so incredible, is them sticking together. It's very Fantastic Four-ish.
Right. Yeah, very much so. Yes. So this movie starts off... Oh, did you have some more that you were going to say? Mm-mm. This movie starts off exactly where the first movie ended, you would say.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly, but for the most part.
Yeah, it's supposed to start right after.
Yes. With and if you don't remember, how did that end again?
So their family, or their house had been blown up by Syndrome's jet landing on it. So all their stuff is gone, but they're at Dash's track meet. Violet's introduced to a boy, or this boy Tony, asks Violet out on a date. And then as they're all walking away to their car at the end, the Underminer,
who is basically his name.
Who's basically like the Mole Man from Marvel Comics.
And who voiced the other
John Ratzenberger.
John Ratzenberger.
That's his character in this. So John Ratzenberger.
Because he has to be in every Pixar movie.
He does have to be. So he shows up. He drills up from the ground. I'm the Underminer. You are all beneath... what's he say? I'm beneath you, but there's nothing beneath me.
And then he says, Norm, let me tell you about the postage stamp.
What's going on here?
What's going on here, Norm? Is that postage stamp. Go ahead. And so John Ratzenberger is the villain.
Yes.
And I don't exactly know what he's... Is he trying to, like, rob the bank or something?
Yeah, basically he comes up, he is... You know, showboating as a villain, as supervillains do, and he starts tunneling again. Of course, the family snaps into action. We just saw how successful they were in the first movie by them all working together, and when this happens, the parents immediately snap into action and tell the kids to,
watch
the
Jack
baby.
Jack.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. I thought, because we know through the previews that Jack-Jack's going to have superpowers. We know he does anyway from the first movie.
Right.
Towards the end, no one else knows in the family yet.
Yeah.
But he does. So I find it funny that they keep trying to pass off Jack-Jack.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he's just excess baggage.
Yeah.
He's a baby, whatever.
Yeah.
So that was kind of fun.
Well,
inside the action that was going on,
yes.
Which starts off great.
Yeah, and they have...
I don't want to watch him, you watch him.
Yeah, well, and because it took me a minute. I was watching and I'm like, but they know he has powers. But when I'm thinking about it, none of them actually saw it. Syndrome was the only one
saw
who
it.
Saw
Syndrome,
him with powers.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they don't actually know. And like the babysitter did, but they erased her.
Yeah.
So it's like... I was like, none of them know what's going on.
Right. But in the process before this happened, the kid that wanted to ask the daughter out notices that the voice sounds familiar and that it's actually Violet, right?
Well, he looks out there and Violet's pissed that she...
Yeah.
Because Dash goes out to do crowd control, so she's stuck with Jack-Jack. She takes off her mask and throws it on the ground, and so he sees who she is.
Yes.
Which, of course, he freaks out and kind of runs off. When Rick Dicker, who is like their handler, figures out what's going, or, you know, comes at the end and says, you know, hey, here's what we're going to do, and starts putting them up in a hotel, Bob says, hey, this kid might have seen what happened.
Yeah.
And so...
So erase.
Yeah, they erase his memory, which leads to some other side effects.
Subplots and side effects. So, basically, they wreak havoc on... Not that they wreak havoc, but they kind of, since superheroes are outlawed, I mean, they're kind of getting blamed for all the wreckage that's going on.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, and it's interesting, an interesting take on it, because they've kind of dealt with this in comic books before. There was, like, Damage Inc. and a couple other things where... You know, it's a comic book that deals with kind of the fallout of superheroing, because you see in movies and cartoons and comics just all the collateral damage that happens in, like, in these big battles in, like, the middle of a populated city, and, you know, how do they take care of that? Who's responsible? And they touched on it a little bit in the first movie when somebody sues and says, well, he didn't want to be saved. You know, he was going to kill himself. You should have let him, but now he's got whiplash, and now he's got his emotional whatever and wants to be paid. And so here, you know, they're like, yeah, look, all this damage has happened, and, like, throughout the entire city while you're trying to stop the villain, and you still didn't stop him.
Right. You still didn't stop him. And we never see him again during the movie.
Yeah, and they even say, they say the banks were insured. If he would have just taken the money and, like, demolished these banks, it would have been fine. They'd have been paid for, and the money inside was insured, like FDIC insured or whatever.
Yeah, but, like, things were falling on people. It doesn't matter.
Well, he would have, right, that part of it, yeah. But he would have, they would have gotten what he wanted, and he would have just bugged out of there.
Yeah, I guess.
But instead, it became this whole hullabaloo down the street.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, I guess that's kind of a point, is, you know, was everything else you're doing worth the added risk?
So the police come to take him away.
Yeah.
Because obviously being a superhero is illegal.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much all you need to know. But if you've not seen the first movie, all you need to know is being a superhero is illegal.
Yeah.
And here you go. And this family has powers.
Yep.
So the cops come and take him away, say all the stuff that you said.
Yeah.
But Frozone escapes.
Yes, he does.
Right.
But he gets approached by a guy in a limousine.
As one does.
Yeah.
In these superhero movies.
Right.
Hello. I'm in a limousine.
Yeah. They're like, how would you like to do whatever again? And kind of pimp. But wasn't that what happened in the first movie?
I thought so.
And you know that they barely missed something happening. Why are you like, this sounds attractive a second time?
But they never, what's his name? John Ratzinger's character?
Underminer.
He never shows back up.
Mm.
So he's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, in Incredibles 3 or... a TV show, he could be in it.
Yeah. I swear that I just saw not long ago that they were going to do like a ink and paint animated or something like that, Incredibles, on one of the Disney channels. Mm-hmm. But I can't find anything about it now.
Don't know. So, and you got to help me with the characters, Jeremy, because you know I'm bad with characters.
Yeah,
the old guy with the eraser. We'll call him the eraser. What's his name?
Oh, Rick Dicker.
Rick Dicker. He sends him to the hotel, the motel, which is modeled after the same motel that's outside of Disney Studios, which I'm going to assume. Yeah, it is.
Is it really?
Yeah. Which I'm going to assume is also probably the same motel modeled after the Florida Project. I'm just taking a guess on that one.
Probably a good thought.
William Dafoe comes out. Kids are eating ice cream, yelling at people. Makes sense.
Yeah. But basically they say, hey, this agency who took care of all this stuff is disbanding.
Yeah.
And so you're on your own. And so they really are.
Yeah, so they tell the kids, like, we can't use our superhero powers anymore.
Yeah, you think it's all fixed up at the end of the first one. And then it seems like they kind of go back. And this was actually the one thing I was kind of like, what?
Well, yeah, because I think they needed something to push the plot.
Right, they did. It just seems so, it seems so weird to me because at the end of the first movie, like, Rick Dicker picks him up in a limo or whatever, and it's like, haha, we're all back. Don't worry, this is good.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, never mind, all this stuff is still horrible. Yeah. And they backtrack from, hey, it was great using your powers too. They kind of talk about it, but it just seemed really weird. It seemed like a two-step forward, one-step back kind of situation.
Probably, but for the purposes of the movie,
yeah,
that's what they chose to do.
Yes.
And the plot is that basically they want to have a PR movement that kind of says that superheroes are good.
Yeah.
They're bringing good culture.
Yes.
And helping and saving people.
Yep.
And that is based on a character that the guy in the limousine that Frozone meets.
Winston Dever.
Winston Dever, played by Bob Odenkirk.
Yes. It took me a minute to figure out what his voice was.
Really? Right away.
At first, I was like,
hey, I'll call you Saul.
At first, I went, how did Will Arnett's voice get so high?
No.
And then I was like, it's Bob Odenkirk. He's got that a little bit of gruffness in there.
Do you think Bob Odenkirk and Will Arnett get, like people get them confused?
No.
Really?
No.
Well, you just did.
Well, I was trying to figure out, because I was way off, I was like, it's like his voice, but higher. Yeah, it's definitely Bob Odenkirk. And Bob Odenkirk does a great job with it.
Yeah, he's enjoyable in this movie. He runs, what does he run? Like some kind of...
Dever Corp. It's like, Dever Corp is like a...
I don't know, they have money.
Communications company.
They have 60s money.
Yeah.
60s or 70s.
60s.
I forget that these movies are kind of set in like the 60s.
It takes place in 1962.
Okay, so that makes sense.
Yeah, and in the first movie, like the very first part where everything gets outlawed was 1947.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. It's just so odd.
It is, right? But, okay. Yeah.
Anyway, so he wants to put his money into, well, like a PR plan, like I said, about superheroes.
Yeah.
Right? And then in walks is, so he invites Frozone.
Yes.
Elastigirl.
Yep.
And Mr. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And they all go to his swanky 60s. I mean, this thing, like...
It's almost like a cyberpunk version of the 60s.
It really is. I really like it, though. Oh, my God, I want to live there.
Well, and this happens a lot in, like, comics and, like, comic movies and stuff where things take place in a certain timeline, but, like, the technology looks further than it should be. And because of that, it's like, well, we have people who fly.
It's not steampunk, but it's cyberpunk kind of in a way.
Kind of. It's kind of somewhere in between. It's Mad Men punk.
So, anyway.
Yeah. So.
So he invites him to their business.
Yeah, there's the two. It's Winston Dever. And his sister. And
he's a fan of all of them.
Yes.
He knows all their theme songs, which I didn't know there was theme songs.
I didn't either.
For these. You've seen the first one more than me.
Yeah. In the first one, they talk about, like in the DVD extras, you can see there was like, they had fun with it. There was a cartoon that they had where they were voicing it. And then they have the same cartoon. It was Mr. Incredible and Frozone. And then they do a where they do a like a director commentary almost on it.
What,
where
they were part of television shows?
Yeah. They had like a cartoon based on them.
But were they being played by the real people?
They were, yeah, it was the, well, it was, so it was this weird animation that came out, like, in the 40s, where it was like, everything was like a still drawing, and just, like, the mouths were moving.
Right.
And so that's what these were, and they're going on, and Frozone and Mr. Incredible are doing, like, commentary for it.
Okay.
And are just trashing it as they go through. It was really funny. But okay.
So they have theme songs, and they have old outfits, like retro outfits.
They wore their original ones. They said, Frozone goes, wear your original outfits, not the new Incredible ones.
Which I was like, cool.
Yeah, wear your original ones, because this guy seems like he likes nostalgia.
Yeah.
And so we learned that, like, his father was a big fan.
Yes. His father was a big supporter of superheroes.
Yes. And when...
kind of the Commissioner Gordon Batphone. He had a bunch of Batphones that coincide with different superheroes of the day.
And he died in a robbery.
Right. Shortly after the outlawed superheroes.
Yeah, because the superheroes weren't there to answer the call. Right. And so he died. And then... so the brother, Winston Dever, and his sister, Evelyn, take over the company.
So his sister's name is Evelyn Dever.
Yeah.
She's played by Catherine Keener.
Catherine Keener, yes.
So, you know, and there's, you know, there's stuff that happens in this movie. I don't want to spoil it as much.
Right.
So we'll kind of leave it at that. But they are brother and sister, and she kind of invents, she's like the inventor. And he's more of the salesperson.
Yeah.
You would say.
Yes. He's like the...
A yin and a yang, you would say.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, and they the plan is that they're going to... They have these little cameras,
like,
built
cameras
into their suits.
Cameras, dash cams, like, that they put...
Built into their suits that are just like a little pinhole cam.
Yeah.
So that... people can see, because right now the only thing that the news was showing was like the damage after the fact, and then the superheroes getting led away in cuffs.
Right. So they wanted to show from the superheroes' point of view
what they're actually doing,
yep. How they're saving people.
Yep.
So they decide that they want to start doing this PR stunt with Elastigirl.
Yes, because
she has.
The least amount of collateral that she causes damage, with her power. So,
and she's a woman.
Yeah.
Just saying.
And I'm sorry. Like, in the first one, Elastigirl was badass. She was badass in that one.
She's great in this one.
She's badass in this one.
She almost takes even more of a front. Like, she's almost the lead character in this.
Yes, I would say so.
In this movie. And this kind of upsets Mr. Incredible, because Mr. Incredible is then going to stay at home while she goes through this PR parade.
Well, he wants to be able to superhero out in the open again, and the kids not have to hide who they are all their life. And so...
In order to do that, they need to start with the last girl. So she goes on this PR thing, and he's at home watching the kids. So he's kind of Mr. Momming it up.
Yeah.
The way that Craig T. Nelson knows how to do.
Yes.
Just coaching them over and over again about math.
Yeah.
About boys. You know, about every super thing that happens
like Jack is.
So this is where we start seeing more of Jack's personality come out, and his superhero stuff come out.
And even more powers than you saw in the first movie.
Yes.
Now, I will say that Jack-Jack really steals the show through a big portion of the movie.
There's a portion of the movie that he does, yes.
I think a lot of it he does. Towards the end, it starts getting a little bit more collaborative.
Yeah.
But there's like a lot of it where... He's very prominently featured, and with, I mean, good reason. He's cute. It's fun. you know, you can do.
You know how I feel about that. I don't know. I also feel like when you have a character that's a breakout character in certain things, and then you start kind of relying more on that, that it almost becomes gimmicky to me.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it doesn't work, because it does work in this movie. It works great in this movie.
Yes.
It's funny in this movie, but it's also a gimmick.
Yeah.
But it's a gimmick that works well.
Like Mater being a spy.
That does not work well.
And we talked about that. It would have had that been the focus of the movie, like
I agree.
Full focus. Yeah. But,
but Jack does steal this movie.
Yes.
And they're rightfully so that they should do that.
Yeah.
Because he's a fan favorite.
Oh, God, yeah.
By far.
Well, and they even had...
I think there's sprinkle in some Dash, because Dash kind of has some good lines, too, but not like Jack.
They, and I thought the kids had some good ones last time, too, but, like, I don't know. Like, I actually liked the other kids more. I felt like...
I think so, too.
I felt there was more depth to the other one, or to them in this one. I think in the first one, it was just that... Dash was mad because he wanted to be super. Violet was like always just like not confident in herself.
Do you think they had more backstory or more arc during?
Well, I think they'd already gotten past some of those things, and so you're able to.
You like them better in this movie or the first movie?
I felt the kids were better developed in this movie because, well. It really is across the two movies. Like, I feel like they did a good job of further developing them in this one.
I thought they didn't use them... They didn't use the family as a family unit as much in this movie.
Yes.
And that kind of disappointed me at the beginning.
Me too. Because
I was like, you just established, like you said.
Yeah.
We're family. We can do this.
But that's what I was saying. They took a big step back.
You really do that. And you just... take five steps back on that, you know?
Like it's
just,
yeah, you lost some of the momentum.
But they come back and you know, we'll talk about that, but, you know. So, I mean, that's about the juxtaposition of, like, what this movie is. So we will talk about, let's talk about some favorite scenes that we liked about this movie, shall we? So that's the whole thing. They, you know, someone's trying to sabotage. There's, we'll talk about, there's the villain. The villain is the screen slaver.
Screen slaver.
Yeah. So the villain tries to hypnotize people.
Yeah, who hypnotizes people through screens.
Screens.
Who is basically saying, you know, you all rely on screens,
right.
you know.
She's very technology-driven kind of villain.
And this is where screen slavers' screens flash really fast. And it is, like, kind of jarring,
I think it's jarring, yes.
Yeah,
but I think it's very cool. And then they have to figure out who that is. We, you know, eventually we do save the day, and you know, everything comes together. In the end, the parents get kidnapped, and then the kids have to then go and save them.
Yes.
So because everyone else is like hypnotized, so we'll have that. Let's talk about some favorite scenes about this movie. What are some of your favorite scenes in this movie?
I
think you and I have our probably favorite number one scene, and that is the whole motorcycle chase scene with the train. Would you say it's one of the best scenes?
Yeah, I would say that's one of mine.
But what they did with that, they separate when she separates.
Yes, so
the motorcycle and uses her.
An elasticycle.
Flexing ability?
Yeah, has an elasticycle that's like an electric motorcycle. And Bob's like, when did you have a motorcycle? She's like, I had one. Don't worry about it. And she's like, it's been a while since I had my Mohawk. And he's like, you had a Mohawk? She's like, don't worry about it. Just kind of.
Did you want to see a picture of her with a Mohawk? Because I sure did.
I almost felt like that was a reference to like Storm from the X-Men.
Oh, you did.
Where, like, in the 80s, she
had
a Mohawk.
Yeah, she did have a Mohawk,
But I was kind of, interested in, why did she have a Mohawk?
Well, I'm interested in what they were before, but that's just me. I enjoyed that scene quite a lot.
Yeah.
But the action was great. There's that scene where, like, She's just whipping and going through tunnels and like stretching, which was awesome. And then but then she would stretch and then flip, and then go around something else.
And so her bike as she was
it's
driving
just one of those
it.
Things that like a stunt person cannot do this.
No,
and so you need like a show like this to do it.
So
like an animated show.
The thing that I like that they do with Elastigirl in this, a lot of times people with stretchy powers. They just do one
they're
thing.
Lame.
They always have them.
I'm gonna grab this glass.
They always
all the way
have
over there.
They always have their legs on the ground, their abdomen wrapped around somebody, and like wrapped around somebody's fists, trying to hold them in place. I mean, there's like you get some people and some good writers for like the Elongated Man and Plastic Man and DC Comics.
Yeah.
There's really not that many like stretchy people. There is obviously an Elastigirl in DC, which is why when they put out product or toys of Elastigirl from The Incredibles, she has to be named Mrs. Incredible. DC let them keep the name for the movies, but the products can't have it.
So, but you enjoyed that scene, you would say.
Yeah, and there were some
cool
things.
I thought
cool
it was amazing.
I want them to write every stretchy person's action in comics. Because I'm always like, oh my god, that was incredible! Like I can't believe her motorcycle detaches into two parts.
Yeah,
and then she the back part falls away from the front part, and then she springs them together, which launches her forward. Like it's almost like a
these movies. Kind of, these movies are action movies.
Oh my
god!
They're
they're very much action.
Oh
movies.
Yeah,
but it's also an action movie that has a heroine.
Yes.
At the center of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we have a woman who is, which is great. We have a woman who's at the center of it. The only times that I felt like they were reusing her powers a little too much was the whole parachute thing. And we're like, oh, we can just use the parachute thing and get out of trouble.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's the only time I felt like.
I thought there was a few things they did. They also left out that like maybe they could have used like cool things.
Yeah.
Scenes from the first one where I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, when she saves Isabella Rossellini's character.
Yeah.
The chancellor or whatever her name is.
Ambassador.
The ambassador, yeah. When she saves her, you know, that was a good scene. Like, these are good scenes. I also did enjoy the scene that we're talking about with the flashes of lightning. I thought that was really cool looking.
Yeah.
But it was very jarring.
Especially when it went on for so long.
It went on for... This movie is the longest Pixar movie. It clocks in about an hour and 58 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is very long for a kids movie.
Yes.
And you can feel it, but not in a bad way feel it, but like almost in a way where you're like, okay, we need to kind of wrap up a few things.
So, okay. So in the first one, we had the scenes where like Mr. Incredible's getting back into shape. They do it through montage. Like, I feel a lot of the Mr. Incredible's time with the kids could have been montage stuff and either make the movie a little shorter or add in more, like, group family stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot. Like I said, it almost becomes, his character becomes Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
And, which is fine, because you get a lot of the comedy from that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it could have been... You could have still played the comedy the same, got the same laughs, and have a montage.
So,
kind of cut a little bit.
So, they did a lot with, like, Jack-Jack and his powers and how Mr. Incredible is dealing with them. They show that in, like, the previews for the movie. But I will say that I was a little, like... In the first movie, we have a lot... Like, even when the kids were doing their own thing, they were doing a lot with, like... Violet was disappearing, or she was using force fields.
Yeah.
Dash was always running around. And so part of me is like, they don't do as much with that with the kids.
Yeah.
Like when they're doing the family stuff, it's like just watching an animated family.
Hmm.
And I was kind of like,
do you think, because, I mean, this is 14 years later. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think this movie. I gave this movie like a B+. I don't think it's as great as the first movie, but it's still a good ride.
Yes. It is still good. I think the visuals are good.
I think the only downfall is it really does run a little long.
Yeah. There also, we get introduced to other heroes.
We do get, let's talk about those for a little bit.
Yeah.
Just for a little bit. We get introduced to a couple heroes who have come out hiding because Elastigirl has saved a bunch of people, and so she's been on the news, and things are coming, turning around as far as making superheroes legal. Those characters are, what are the characters? Like, what was
There's Void.
There's Void, played by Sophia Bush.
Sophia Bush, who is my favorite of the new ones.
I really enjoyed her, but I like when people, it's kind of like vibe.
Yeah.
You know, on Flash, where someone can vibe someone through something else. Like,
she makes portals, basically.
Portals, yes, basically.
And there's a lot of cool, graphic or like visual things that come from the portal stuff.
It's 14 years later, and I think the animation is so great in this. Not that the animation was terrible in the first movie, but you can tell it's 14 years later, and things have gotten a lot better.
Well, in the first one, they into your main characters, they put so much detail, like, in the first one. But, like, your peripheral characters were all kind of generic looking.
They were kind of junky looking.
And this one, I don't even think they were junky. They were just, like, very similar.
Well, that's what I mean.
Nondescript.
Nondescript.
And in this one, they are, everybody is very detailed.
So, Void is one of them.
Void. Crush Hour.
Crush Hour, yeah.
Yeah. Who's a guy who just crushes things.
Is there a person who played him? I can't think of it.
Bill Lamar.
Bill Lamar. Yeah, Bill Lamar did a couple of them.
Yep. He was that. There was
Reflux. Old guy named Acid Reflux or something?
Yeah, named Reflux.
That just pukes everything?
He like pukes lava.
Great, thanks. Just pukes everything.
There's characters with that actual power.
There you go.
Puke acid and Marvel.
And then my favorite of the whole bunch, an owl named Screech.
Yeah, an owl named Screech.
Voiced by Dustin Diamond.
No, he wasn't.
No, he was not.
Screech, there's Brick.
Yes.
There's like an electric kid.
He was drowning slowly off the coast. Well, and like I didn't know where.
Brick Wall or Brick or whatever. Yeah. There's an electric kid.
Yes.
I feel like there's one.
And then
more
there were some other people that were with their ambassadors at the end. Ambassadors at the end. We don't know who they are.
Yeah, but it was.
But there was like a plus and minus kid.
Yes.
I just call him plus and minus kid or positive and negative.
There are actually.
I feel like magnet people or something.
They were like positive and negative, like electric things. And there's actually characters like that.
Okay.
And
that's the only one I can really remember.
There was one who has a sweater that it goes up to, like, his nose, and then it had goggles above
that. Was that Captain Sweater?
I think it had a C on it, so I'm guessing that's Canada. And then there was a Russian one who had, like, one of those, like, Russian, like, those tall, woolly Russian hats.
Yes.
And then there was a lot of, like, that.
Yeah. Didn't they kept trying to, like, ask the president, hey, I've got some terrible news about Hillary Clinton, do you want to know about it?
Yes.
They try to get meetings with
Hillary. That's his ability. He just tries to set up meeting.
Yes.
The scheduler.
Well, Mr. Manafort, I don't know anything.
So, yeah, you get to see a lot of things. And that was one thing that I was kind of disappointed in the first movie, actually.
I quite enjoyed that we had other characters.
Yeah, because in the first movie, it was this, like, it was almost a little bleak where they were just like,
I was,
yeah, these are the heroes you have left because everybody else is dead.
They set it up nice. They showed us what their abilities were, and then immediately were like, they're hypnotized. So they're like fighting them.
Yes. Actually, that's one of my favorite
scenes. And then they slowly
would
take their hypnosis off.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes. So at some point in the movie, Screenslaver manages to basically capture all of them. And turn them into his minions, and so against their will, because these guys are heroes, so it's against their will, but they are going after the family.
Children.
Yeah, and Frozone shows up and kind of is playing it cool, and I just love it. I was like, okay, this is pretty cool, and it becomes this whole, like, rumble escape kind of thing, and I thought that was great. I thought it was very action packed, and the sense of danger was high.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great.
So let's talk about a couple of themes that we got from this movie. like we said, this was 1962, mm-hmm. but it's kind of an alternate universe, 1962. So there's very much civil rights that go along with it. Civil rights through making the superheroes legal. Wise, I thought it was smart that it's 14 years later, and they did put. I thought it was smart on Disney and Pixar to put Elastic Girl as like the main person, mm-hmm. and kind of have her as, like this poster for this new hero.
Yeah.
With the women's movement and the Me Too, I thought that was really, really nice that they did that. They haven't done that a lot in a lot of these movies, so it's about time that they did that through a superhero movie too as well. So that was really cool. Yeah. I like that. About the family too. What themes did you get?
Well, and so I want to touch on the one about there's almost like this role reversal between the first and second movie. In the first movie, Bob is off. He's, you know, got the job. He's doing all this stuff, and she's at home, and kind of falls into this traditional, like, oh, I'm just going to stay at home and be the worried housewife kind of thing. And eventually she steps up and kicks ass. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's a little reversed. So, which I love, like I am so glad that she was kick ass from the get go.
Do you think if this sequel came out, say, 10 years instead of 14 years or even 5 years, that would be what it was, though? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so at all.
I don't think
it would be as prominent
as
they did in this movie.
No,
I think it actually
be.
Works for this movie that they did do it that way.
I agree.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and it was, they talk about even in there, there's this dialogue between Evelyn.
Because even I wanted to be Elastic Girl.
Yeah.
Right? You know? I was like, you're the most kick-ass person in the room.
There's this dialogue between Evelyn and Elastic Girl where she's like, you know, it's pretty great. You finally get to be out of Mr. Incredible's shadow. She's like, well, I wasn't in his shadow. And she's like, yeah. You know, no. She's like, I was my own hero. And Evelyn's like, of course you were.
Right. I mean, they talk about it in the movie.
You know, she knows that, you know, everybody was like, oh, yeah, you're Elastigirl, you know, Mr. Incredible's girlfriend. I mean, that's kind of how she got treated.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you finally get to be in the forefront. And she was like, well, what are you talking about? Like, you know, you are in your brother's shadow. Your brother is the face of this company, and you're here when you're making all this stuff happen. And she was like, I don't want to be.
Yeah.
I kind of like that it wasn't like a bunch of people who were like, who rules world, girls? You know, like getting out, like they had to be the she didn't want to be the face of that. She wanted to be an engineer, and that's who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I like that it was, that seemed more realistic to me instead of having her be like, I'm going to be president of the company instead and, you know, and have to be the, you know, and because it feels very forced that way. I think that, like, it was more realistic for her to be like, I have a career goal and I want to be an engineer and I'm going to be an engineer. I don't want this other stuff.
There you go. Should we start our five questions, shall we?
Or
do you have anything else to say about this movie?
I kind of want to a little bit touch on the role, like the family aspect in this.
Okay, yeah.
It's interesting to me. So, like, actually, let me take one step back. One more thing about Elastigirl. I like in this one, they dropped some of the things. Like, in the first one, they have Elastigirl puts on her uniform for the first time, like her new one. And she, in the first movie, they have a scene where she's being kick-ass, she's walking around doing whatever, and she sees her reflection and, like, checks out her butt in there. And people are like, I feel that. I remember people being like, yeah, I feel that, where all of a sudden God, is that what I look like? But, you know, in this one, they're like, she doesn't care, which, by all rights, like, care or don't, it doesn't matter. But, like, I like that was not, like, it wasn't in the middle of her being kick-ass that she was like,
does this make my... But that's what I mean. So it's it's not necessarily 14 years later in the movie, but it's 14 years later for us.
Yes.
So a lot of things have changed. A lot mm-hmm. of topics are now up front that might not have been, say, 5 years ago or even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So I think that was very smart of Disney to say to themselves, let's kind of make sure that this is more updated.
Yes.
But also keep it set in a specific time.
Yeah.
So, but as far as the family thing, you said there was a family aspect that you wanted to talk about.
I like the role of family, and it kind of in both of these, but it seems like
there was more of a punch in the first one as far as the family. Like,
as far as like the main unit family, yeah. But I do think that they do a better job in this one. Like in the first one, Frozone is like Lucius's. Robert's buddy who comes over, and like the kids are like, hey, Lucius, and just kind of.
Well, now they call him Uncle Lucius.
Yeah. And so he comes in, and like he's helping take care of the kids. When Robert is, when Bob is worn down, he shows up and is basically looking after the kids with him. I mean, it's like, and then even Edna Mode in this one. She's not in it as much in this one, but I'm glad she was in it. And when she is, I think the scene is great.
That's about as much as Edna wanted. Yeah. I'm going to tell you that much.
Yeah. If she would have been in it more, it'd have been too much.
Well, yeah, I agree.
But like the interactions,
she should be in it because it's an Incredibles movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The interactions with her,
played by Brad Bird.
Brad Bird. Yes. Her and Jack, and Robert, I think are, it's good. But even like I got more of a sense, like in the first one, I was like, always like, okay, she's obviously just like a designer and whatever for him. But like I get more of the sense of their friendship in this. And again, that she's like family.
Didn't I always think that she was played by Linda Hunt?
Yes.
Yeah. I always think she's Linda Hunt
because I think they just scan Linda Hunt. We're like, well, that model's done. I think it almost, it gives you the sense of like extended family that I don't think
not
we
even
had as
through
much in the first
Frozone,
one.
But like even through like kind of the other superheroes that they come across.
Especially Void.
Yeah, especially Void.
Void is like a fangirl. A little bit.
But you know, but it's very inclusive. They're like, well, come on, you know, let's. Yeah. But, you know, you're part of our family. Even Bob Oldenkirk's character at the end of the movie, you know, they kind of make him his own kind of in a way, you know. Yeah. They're like, hey, you're one of us. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know.
And so, like, yeah, this one to me, yeah, it doesn't have as much of, like, the core family together.
Yeah.
But when I think about it a little bit more, I'm like, even when the core family wasn't together, there was a lot more, like, Frozone with these people.
There was a lot more Frozone, like, especially at the end. I was like, we're getting a lot of, like, if Frozone wasn't there, that ship might not have, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's...
Because he's, like, spraying and freezing the water because they're in this ship at the grand finale.
Yeah, there's a...
Part of it. And, like, I'm like, they're really kind of lucky Frozone was there. Like, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyway, but yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah. Shall we go through our five questions?
Yes.
We shall.
What was your... we talked a little bit about... What was your absolute favorite part of the movie?
Watching this movie, you can tell that the people that play the parents, Holly Hunter.
Yeah.
And Craig T. Nelson. You could tell, like, especially Craig T. Nelson, I swear, loves these movies.
Oh, he does.
I swear he loves doing these movies. I love him. Jack is really the person that kind of really stands out a lot. One of the best parts of this movie also is Catherine Keener. We don't talk a lot about her in this movie, but I think that what she did for her character and what happens to her character, I think she plays it very well.
Yeah.
She's known to play characters like this, but I think she does it very well. Having said that, I really enjoyed the action in this movie in ways that I didn't think I would.
Yes.
Like, I thought, well, they're not going to outdo themselves, but I think they did a little bit with the action.
Yes, I think the train thing
with the whole motorcycle thing just blew me away.
Yes.
That was my favorite part.
I think the action overall is much better in this movie. I think in the first movie, we always had like a lot of little short bursts of action, and then like a lot more like espionage movie pieces in between.
Yeah.
Which I love the first Incredibles. I absolutely do. This one, it's much more action packed, but the in between scenes where there wasn't action sometimes drag a little bit for me.
This one?
Yeah. Like the fan.
I agree. And there's also like the heart of it is it just misses it just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just
though.
A little bit. Just a little and that's bit. Why I give it a B+.
Right. I would agree. But I think the action in this movie is fantastic. And I do. I think, like, my favorite interactions are probably up there, too, is the interactions between Edna and Jack-Jack.
Yeah.
I think had me in stitches.
Mm-hmm.
Would you reboot, continue, or cancel?
Continue. If you want to continue this movie, if there's any Pixar movie that you should continue it. Do not wait 14 years to continue this movie. We had to wait so long for that.
So
you had to wait longer than me because I watched it a couple years ago. But
so way back in the day.
Also, if you want to make a show of it, make a show of it. I think you have enough other characters to make a mythology of it.
Yes.
To continue it.
I remember do back anything. In the day, there was this whole like rumor about a story that was going to come out. It was that the Incredibles were, it took place years after the first one.
Okay.
And it was that, the family, the four of them, it was Mr. Incredible, Elastigirl, Dash, and Jack-Jack were the four heroes working together. It's like a family team. And that Violet worked for whatever the organization was as a spy, and that it was something about they had to go save her, but she was an adult at that point. But it took place more in like the 80s instead of the 60s.
Oh, wow.
But it was like down the road.
That seems fun.
Which I was like, that seemed cool to me. But I almost wish this didn't take place right after the first one.
Oh, I'm glad it did.
You glad it did?
Yeah.
See, I would have liked some time for something else to develop, and then you can set the tone for this one and make it its own thing. I mean, really, you limit any of, like, you have to make now everything happen build-up-wise in this movie. I mean, I don't know.
It sets the action going right away. We know that the action's going to happen.
Yeah.
So I disagree with you on that, but that's me.
I almost would have rather it be you have, like, the next one came out was in the 80s, and then the third one can be, like, further along or something.
I disagree.
Like that.
I think you will lose. I think you'll lose stuff. I think if you have a show that would continue it that way, it would be better.
Yeah.
Where it would slowly be. But no, I don't think so. I think they did the right thing. And I think they did the right thing by putting her forefront.
Yes.
And realizing the social aspects of what's going on nowadays.
I very much agree.
Yeah. Without preaching it.
Yeah.
They put it in the ether. Yeah.
And also, I like Mr. Incredible had a line. He says something about...
Was it, you have powers?
No.
Okay.
He says, I'm not a substitute parent. Which I think is a lot, like, I've seen that more lately, where, because think about in TV shows and movies, like, can you watch the kids? Can you babysit the kids? Basically, like, you know, in these two-parent households, the father isn't babysitting, he's parenting,
mm-hmm.
whatever, but the kind of common, like, humor type thing was that the father's a boob who's not interested in whatever. I think that in this one you had where, yeah, he had to adjust, but he's like, I'm not a substitute parent. I'm a parent. You know, he's, So I did like that with it. Do you think this movie stands on its own?
This is a very interesting question because we have been talking about how it does pick up right after it does, which that could be tricky in itself. So there is some exposition that does happen. I think that if you had not seen the first one and you go into this movie, that you will be fine. So I think yes and no. So it's a very hard yes and no.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are a lot of maybe side things about people you might not know.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're as important.
Yeah.
As if you just jump in and watch this movie. So just watching this movie alone, I think, am I confused about anything? Maybe a little bit at the beginning, but towards the end, you're not.
Yeah. I don't think it stands on its own. Because we don't really, like, they explain why superheroes are illegal in the first movie. And this one, we're just kind of in the depth of, oh, hey, here's what's happening.
That's what I mean at the beginning.
Yeah. You know, we learn more about, like, you know, we don't really get into the background with Edna Mode. They don't have any expository dialogue there. It just kind of is. I think there's a lot that they build up in the first one. We talk about that, though, with other movies, where, like, a good sequel doesn't necessarily stand on its own, but it builds off the existing universe. Like,
but I really
in a
think
very
you
solid
cannot,
way.
I think I disagree with you. I think that you can watch this movie without watching the first one. And I think you'll be fine. I think you'll enjoy it. I don't think you might not enjoy it as much as a fan, just like anything else, but I think you'll be fine.
I don't think it's a complete disaster on its own, but I really don't think it stands on its own.
Oh, I disagree.
Does this make you want to watch the first one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Bar none, it makes you want to watch the first one.
And I'm really excited.
It makes you want to watch the first one, and it makes you want to not wait 14 years for a third one or any continuation of the story.
The one thing that I am really excited about with the fact that it takes place right after is that you can just watch these back to back.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And it just flows right into
it
the
would
next.
Flow right into it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing, but I think it also is good that that you can separate this. The only thing that and they don't really the gravedigger guy, what's his name?
Underminer.
Whatever. I keep calling him a gravedigger. I don't know why.
Gravedigger.
I guess you don't really know a backstory about that, but like, do you really need to? Because they don't say anything in the first movie.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's almost more of a nod to comic book fans with like the whole mole man.
Oh, okay.
Thing. Although we get to see the Underminer do more stuff in this one in kind of the opening scenes of it. And I was just kind of like.
But where'd he go?
I don't know. To his underground mole layers. But he had some cool moves in this one, though.
Yeah.
Which I was not expecting. He's not quite as bumbling as the mole man from the comics. Sum your experience up in two words.
On par. I think this is on par with the first one.
P-A-R-R, like the family name?
Sure. Yeah. Yep. That's what I meant. exactly what I meant. Uh-huh. How'd you know? I think that this is on par with the first movie. I don't think this is as great as the first movie. But I think the first movie is an A-. I think this is a B+.
Yeah.
So I think this is on par with the first movie as far as story-wise, as far as action-wise, as far as superhero-wise, as far as comedy-wise. I think it's all there. There's just a little bit of heart that's missing.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, but it's not that bad.
Mm-mm. Oh, no. I don't want anybody to come away thinking that we're like, this is not a good movie.
Oh, this is a movie that, especially if you've seen the first movie and you would like the first movie, watch it. If you've not seen the first movie, you can easily watch this movie.
Or not easily, please watch the first.
I would suggest watching the first movie.
Yeah, definitely.
But you can pick up easily. Yeah.
Mine is Family Ties. Because, not because of the...
Sha-na-na-na.
No, I say family ties because this one, there is much more with the family, and it kind of ties up some of those, like the relationships there. You get to see their family kind of expanded, their extended, like the family you choose kind of gets extended. And then you also realize for characters across the board, just how much, you know, your family can make or break you and,
there you
and
go.
All that kind of stuff.
There you go. Yep. Anything else you would say about this movie?
Definitely go see it.
I say also see it in the movie theater. Do not wait to watch this. I think, not that it's going to be bad on your TV screen, but I think watch this in the movie theater.
If you can.
Go see it.
If you can, definitely watch it in the movie theater.
Yeah.
I think it is it's a great experience. I'm biased just because I love superhero stuff so much, but this is good, and I think it's a good companion piece to the first one.
There you go. Where can people find us, Jeremy?
People can find us at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com. They can find us, which we're featured on at the moment.
We are. We're a featured podcast.
Here we are.
On podbean.com.
For this week. Yeah. You can find us at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, any of those kind of podcatcher kind of things. We are not on Spotify, but
Podcrawler,
we are trying to work on
podcast.
It. Podcrawler?
Pod around the ding dong?
Podawatomy?
Podcast barn?
Podcast barn? Yes, we are probably on that one.
I don't know. I just made those up.
Pod knife, that's real.
Could you tell?
Yes.
Pod knife's a real one.
Yeah, it is, and we are on it. But also, at nophonynetwork.com, you can find our landing page there. It'll link up to all of our stuff. And while you're there, you can check out other fantastic No Phony Podcast Network shows. All sorts of great ones on there. Yeah, just something for everybody on that page.
All right, we're going to wrap up this episode, and stay tuned next episode for our wrap-up for our Pixar movies, where we will be doing what movie?
Finding Dory.
Finding Dory. Grab your Kleenex for that one, and we will see you next time. And remember, the sequel is king.
Here comes it.
cat who's always chill.
Who's the cat?
When survival odds are close to nil.
Who's that?
Frozen.